Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trendy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416. National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
A very good morning, you daily mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. You know it, BBM, Bumabrip Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. You can have your Sabre callings on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. All right, now look, it is National Science Week. We're going to catch up with a deadly brother by the name of Corey Tutt, and talk about his love, his passion for science. He also been awarded the following honours, 2020 New South Wales Young Australian of the Year, CSIRO Indigenous STEM Champion, and ABC 2020 Trailblazer. On the line, Corey, a very good morning. How are you?
Good morning, brother. How are you?
I'm very good, my brother. Before we start, let the mob know who your mob, where you from.
I'm Corey Tutton. I've got mob from Camilleroy Country in northern New South Wales.
Fantastic, beautiful footprint there, my brother. So look, you got a love, a passion for science. So tell us about how it all started and what you're doing with it now, mate.
Hey, brother. Like I had a really interesting childhood where I was I got to move around a lot, and you know, the one constant in my life was animals and picking up lizards and snakes and spiders and creepy crawlies, and that's how my love of science really grew. Doing that.
Fantastic. So what, straight out of high school? Did you go straight into it, did you?
No, well, I grew up throughout my life picking up lizards and snakes. I never really grew out of it. And at 16, I sat across from a careers advisor and I said I wanted to be a zookeeper, and he said you needed two PhDs and a degree, and you know, before I knew it, I was on a bus to Western Australia from Ewan Country and on the south coast of New South Wales, and ended up working in a wildlife sanctuary and then becoming a zookeeper and working with animals and then working in the labs with animals. And that's how I sort of became a scientist and doing science.
So you also got a passion of sharing that beautiful love and passion for science with our mob.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, our mob are the first scientists, the first astronomers, the first forensic scientists, the first chemists.
Yep.
If you get lost, if a gammon fella gets lost in the bush, the first person they call are the blackfellas to go and find him.
Exactly. So, look, it must be beautiful to share this information, especially with our mob, and educate them that way as well, you know, with this beautiful topic.
Yeah, for sure. And I believe no matter where you come from, what background you are, which mob you come from, you should have the right and the access to telescopes and books and all that. So a lot of our remote schools don't really get a lot of the resources that they deserve. So part of what we do with Deadly Science is we connect it back to culture, but we also give them the resources like telescopes because it's important.
So you're an educator also for non-Indigenous Australians or non-Indigenous people of the world in regarding how First Nation people, 60,000 years, and our information, and bring it to the table, and a bridge builder, so to speak, yeah?
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, it's you know, if we're the country that invented bread, right? And that's, you know, it's not just my people's history, it's our people's history. It's, you know, and people need to learn that. Non-Indigenous people need to value First Nations knowledges, especially with this country, especially while we have wildfires and natural disasters and the way we manage the land. And it's science. Our old people did science all the time.
So I suppose, you know, and you would agree we are students for life, are we not?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, part of caring for country is science in itself. You learn country, you learn what country, how to look after country and how to manage country. And that, you know, that's science. You know, it's asking questions. And
exactly.
It's important that kids out there, and especially mob, keep asking questions and keep learning and keep striving.
So, Corey, where are you based at the moment, and what work are you into, and how are you employed?
I'm based in Gadigal Country in Sydney now, and I'm working really hard. I'm working full time at the Matilda Centre,
yes,
on the Cracks in the Ice project, and that's my full time gig. And I do Deadly Science part time. I fund all the money myself, and I send books out, and I've sent 12,000 books out now and over 500 telescopes and mobs all over, especially up in Akron and Cairns as well. So
good.
We've got to get up there at some point.
Please.
Maybe after COVID, we'll get up there and come visit and learn a bit and teach a bit, and we'll see how we go.
Fantastic. Look, great talking with you, my brother. Enjoy that journey. Keep doing what you do. A deadly bridge builder you are. And look, the passion with science is within your heart and soul. I feel it, my brother. Thank you very much. You take care. Stay safe, stay warm, and we'll talk soon, Corey.
Yeah, just one more thing.
Yeah, brother.
Go on to nationalscienceweek.com, and there's a lot of different Aboriginal scientists out there.
Good.
Scienceweek.net.au, and, you know, science equals hope and education equals freedom. Mm. But the biggest thing for us is that we check out some of the other Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander scientists participate in National Science Week. True. Our story is important.
Beautiful. Thanks for sharing, brother. All the best to you. Take care, eh?
Take care, bro.
Bye-bye. Adelian there, Corey Tully's name is, and look, he's passionate about science, and it is National Science Week, and First Nation man he is, and he's using science as a bridge builder, and educating non-Indigenous people of the world, also educating our mob as well, and he highly recommends for people to go onto the webpage, all the www.scienceweek.net.au, check it out, and all the information there for your young up-and-coming brothers and sisters out there who are looking at an opportunity, a career path in science, then check that out by all means. Do that. Have your say. Yarn up strong here on National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416. Yarn with the Bully One, Trevor Tim, Trinity Trev Murray from the Curry, your host for your daily program, National Talk Black, and we're live here at the First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bumbaburrup Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Indigenous Radio Service. Give the Murray call. Let's have a yarn. 1-800-422-416.
Down city streets, I would roam. I had no bed, I had no home. Crawled out of bushes early morn. Used newspapers to keep me warm. Then I'd have to score a drink, start me up, help me to think. Down city streets I would roam, use my fingers as a comb. In those days when I was young, drinking and fighting was no fun. It was daily living for me. I had no choice, it was meant to be. Down city streets I would run. I have children of my own. Now I have something I call my own. These are my children, and this is my home. I look around and understand how street kids feel when they're put down. Down city streets I would roam. I had no bed, I had no home. And
G'day, this is Guy Sebastian here, hanging up on our National Talk Black, your big yarning show, BBM 98.7. I remember the day.
Let me start with Coom and Joy Walker. Shorty was someone's daughter. Nathan Reynolds and Melissa Dunn. Eddie Russell, someone's son. Malcolm Smith and Roy James Boney. Joyce Clark, who was someone's honey. Tony Chatfield and Bradley Coolwell. Monty Salt, who was someone's uncle. Bruce Leslie, Maureen Mandajara. Milton Wells, who was someone's father. Clarence Neen, Veronica Baxter. Muriel Binks, someone's mother. It's Wayne Morrison and Barbara Tears. Need a blanket, but nothing to see here. It's Douglas Scott and Greg Dunlop. Faith Barnes, I'll keep on going. It's Harrison Day, Trevor King, and Charlie Michael. It ain't nothing. I got more, like Alistair Riversley, Charlie Highline's just too easy. It's Barbara Yarry, and Kristen Jones, and Roy Walker. And on it goes, then Daniel Yock, then Sheldon Cully, then Dixon Green. Or someone stop me.
It's me, Bush Tucker Bungie, and you're listening to the National Talk Black program. Mark Aran.
National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
A very good morning, you daily mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trinity Trev Murray from Nakari, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bumbabrip Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. You can have your say by calling us on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. All right, I'm going to catch up a yarn now with the CEO of the Lawija Institute, and that's Dr. Janine Mohammed, and have a yarn about working for our people, what helps build a stronger Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander health workforce. On the line, Dr. Janine, good morning. How are you, sis?
Good morning, my brother Trev. Thank you for having me on Talk Black.
Nah, thank you for coming, my sister. First of all, let the mob know who your mob, where you from.
I am from a little place called Point Pierce Mission, where we punch above our weight.
Yes.
I'm an Orungagana woman.
Fantastic.
And I'm coming here from Wurundjeri country, Nairn.
Beautiful. I'm thinking of the mob down there in Victoria and different world that we're living in at the moment. Talk about this beautiful space here, working for our mob. What helps build a stronger Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander health workforce? Nothing beats black on black, my sister. Is that right, Dr. Janine?
Oh, I think when we're, you know, training to become a health professional, the best health professional we can be is a strong Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander health professional. And that's, you know, not always what we're capable of being able to do in the systems that we work in. As we know, that often gets assaulted.
Mm, exactly. Now, the Career Pathways Project, tell us about that, please, Seth.
Yeah, so the Lower Tier Institute, we're a research institute. We don't do research. We actually pay mobs to do research. Mm-hmm. So this is an Indigenous-led piece of research. So it's a two-year project. It was led by AMSANT, which is the peak body for Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander community-controlled health services in the Northern Territory. They were helped along by a whole heap of health services throughout Australia, in particular Billamudji there in New South Wales.
Mm-hmm.
University of New South Wales also helped out in a number of the peak Aboriginal professional bodies. But they interviewed, 400 Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander health workers from right across the professions. It was the first national survey that we've done of this kind. We had a whole heap of engagement, and that kind of speaks to the passion behind.
And when you're talking to a mob, I mean, that's number one resources, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, the one constant thing in Aboriginal health is Aboriginal people.
Exactly.
Other people just come and go.
Go figure. Honestly, you know, like I said, life is simple, people complicated. But look, it's up and running, which is fantastic. A very robust conversation, good information, true information. And from there, we can then move forward in regarding light at the end of the tunnel, closing the gap. Yep.
Yeah, and look, it's a strength-based project, so it really focused on, you know, why our mob, you know, come into this workforce. It's because the legacy, they've often had someone who's a role model within their family.
Yep.
It's always about contribution. It's not about self-gain, you know, and obviously for the improvement and their piece that they can offer for, you know, closing the gap, for our health outcomes to be better. So, you know, we come into this role with all the right reasons.
Mm. And we look for our non-Indigenous brothers and sisters to be at the table with the right headspace, but also with the passion to close this gap, work with our mob and be students as well, yeah?
Yeah, and, you know, that's what we've absolutely heard from this report. You know, us as a people, so 3% of the population, and there's another 97% of the population with most of, you know, the positions of power. They're the ones that have the higher level pay positions. They make the decisions and set the environment. So we need them to be allies. And,
yes.
And the best ally you can be is one that's, you know, really aware of your own biases, yeah, you know, and how you need to enable the system from that position of power to help Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander peoples progress through the system, as well as give the best possible care to our mob.
Sister Doctor, what we're looking at is we are all in the same vehicle heading in the same direction, and we're heading for a common goal, are we not?
Oh, absolutely. You know, like we need to be hungry for a different Australia at the moment, because the health outcomes that we see in our communities, you know, in a country of 27 years of uninterrupted economic gain is not something that, you know, nationally we should be proud of. So we all have to dream for a better future. And, you know, there's not one silver bullet to being able to do that.
No.
But absolutely having our mob working in these services is one way that we're going to close the gap.
Fantastic. Very beautiful conversation, very important conversation. Thank you so very much for sharing, Dr. Janine. All the best to you and your deadly team, your mob and your family. Look, stay safe and we'll yarn soon, Doctor.
Thank you.
Take care, sis. Bye-bye.
Take care. See you, Trevor.
A beautiful yarn there with the Lewicha Institute CEO, that's Dr. Janine Muhammad, and talking about working for our people and what helps build a stronger Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander health workforce. And that's so very important in the Career Pathway Project, which all about surveys and getting things done, and also surveys with our mob and getting the information And that's what it's all about. Black on black is leading our way in regard and closing the gap there. Have your say, Yarn Up Strong here on National Talk Black. Deadly number here is 1-800-422-416. Yarn Up with Bully on Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry. Live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bumber Brit Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation. Thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. Give me a call to Deadly.
Jared Harbrow from the Gold Coast Suns. You're tuned in to National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
1-800-422-416.
G'day you mob, this is Tanya Kernaghan with Trendy Trev and you're tuned in to National Talk Black.
Call us now at 1-800-422-416.
A very good morning, you Delhi mob. Welcome back to your Delhi program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. You know it, BBM Bumber Brit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. You can have your say by calling that Delhi number, 1-800-422-416. All right, now we're going to talk to Yerrika Bales, talk about her situation regarding her beautiful little son, 9-year-old boy, Indigenous brother, with dwarfism, and we're talking about Quaden Bales, and she's suing Newcorp's columnist, Miranda Devine, for defamation over tweets suggesting he pretended to be a victim of bullying in a viral online video. On the line, Yerrika, good morning, my sis, how are you?
Good morning, my brother. I'm beautiful. Absolutely loving the weather here in Cairns. You're very blessed to live in paradise.
Yes, we are in Cairns. I hear you're in Cairns. So fantastic to have you up here in our beautiful city. And look, great to be talking with you, my sister. Just talk quickly about that situation with a young Quaden boy and regarding the Newcorp's columnist, Miranda Devine. I suppose you can't go too deep into it because you are taking her to court on that. So give us a bit of update there, please, sis.
Yeah, well, I guess we'd just prefer to focus on the positives. And I think it's sending a very strong message that this type of behaviour will not be tolerated, especially when it's inflicting and perpetuating a cycle of hate and misinformation, you know, those conspiracy theories. You would think that people would know better. So I think people need to start standing up more and, you know, defending ourselves, especially defending our babies. So, that's all.
Who are the innocent ones in this?
Exactly. You know, he had nothing to do with, you know, any of the conspiracy theories and all the lies that were made up about an innocent 9-year-old kid and about our family as well. So, you know, those legal proceedings are continuing through the court process, so it's something that we can't comment on at the moment. I would just hopefully send the message to people that bullying is not accepted.
Of course it's not.
It's not acceptable behaviour. It will not be tolerated, especially against minority groups. And we need to stand up and support families through this, because it's happening way more than people realise, and it's happening to the extent where our innocent babies are taking their lives at,
yes,
you know, much younger ages. From 8 years old, you know, we've got our kids in community that are attempting suicide and resorting to taking their lives. So I think if we can stand up and support and love each other through that, it'll send a message out there that we're not going to take no crap. We're not going
exactly
to, you know, just sit down and shut up and cop it sweet. We're going to start fighting back and defending ourselves and our babies and our families and communities.
Yes, and that'll never stop, because they're precious cargo when we're talking about our children. But when you're talking about, in the last 5 years, bullying has become a major push for stamping it out, and governments and advertising companies, schools and what have you, have been pushing it overtime regarding stamping it out. Now this has come about, and then when you hear the word scam come into the conversation, they think it's all monetary reasons for pushing this, but that is not the case.
It's very far from the truth. You know, when I hear our lives and see our lives being played out, people picking apart our lives on social media, it's very different to what's happening in our real life scenarios. You know, the lived experience we have with discrimination, just as, you know, First Nations people in this country, and you look at the impacts of, you know, what's been happening for the last 250 years, this is, yes, just like a flow-on effect.
Sure.
And it's a different type of generational trauma that I think inflicted, because in, I don't remember when I was going to school, I didn't encounter bullying. You know, I,
yeah,
never witnessed it. I was never a bully or had been bullied. So I,
exactly,
think it's definitely something that has increased the statistics with social media, because, you know, word's getting out there, people are getting things twisted, and it's very easily twisted on social,
exactly,
media. So,
and when you look at it, bullying and racism, well, you're not born with it, are you? So it's taught.
Exactly. That's right. It's learned behaviours. No one's born racist and no one's born to be a bully. So I think we need to understand, you know, why it's happening, where it's happening, and pull apart or just investigate a bit more on, you know, the understanding. We all, if you ask 100 different people what bullying means, you probably will get a variation of different answers. So there are three different steps of bullying, and the legalities, the consequences now around bullying. It's now, you know, parents can be punished,
exactly,
for their children's bullying behaviours.
The behaviours, exactly,
we need,
yes,
to be aware of the, you know, the legal consequences around bullying now. People are only now just starting to take it seriously, and, you know, it's better late than never, but we've lost way too many lives to bullying that could have been prevented. And if you think of, you know, the last couple of years, we had that one young 12-year-old, she wrote a note saying, maybe when she's dead, you know, the bullying and the racism will stop.
Yeah, sad.
No, it's just,
horses already bolted, too late.
Yeah, it's just too much, too young. You know, we've got to start speaking out about it. It shouldn't be something that we're shame about, or,
exactly,
you know, if people are struggling with suicidal tendencies, I think it's something that is, you know, silenced, and we're made to feel uncomfortable or feel like we can't speak openly and honestly about it because it's shame job, or we're Womba, or we're put under the Mental Health Act, when really, you know, it's very easy to see and understand why people are driven towards, you know, suicidal tendencies. It's really difficult, especially with the world today, and you look at everything that's going on, the,
yeah,
suicide rates are increasing drastically because,
exactly,
of that disconnection.
Yeah, okay, when you look at the situation with young Quaden, when he had the bullying episode and you videoed it, and then support came from around the globe, and there was something like $700,000 at the table, and that's why the word scam came into it, but you didn't take the money, did you?
No, we chose to donate that to, there was six different charities, and then a trust for Quaden to help with his medical and education. And because of, you know, the pandemic, everything's been put on hold and that money's only just been distributed. So now we will be able to make sure that those funds are hitting the ground with grassroots organisations,
yes,
here in our own country, to be able to support families that are dealing with similar situations. But most importantly, what we spoke about as a family on how we would prefer that money to be spent is to be able to provide more support services to be able to help, you know, improve the situations and the statistics here, because there simply isn't enough support. You know, you've got all of this funding and all of these anti-bullying campaigns, yet it's not adding up because the suicide rates are increasing.
Exactly.
And our youth are the highest demographic. You know, young Indigenous boys in this country are taking their lives at the highest rate per capita than any other people in the world. So that's something that we need to focus on and ask ourselves why. What can we be doing to help, you know, our young brothers and sisters to make sure they're feeling okay?
Yes. And it'd be a double whammy bammy for Quaden in regard to dwarfism, being a First Nation boy. I mean, like, the four walls are closing in, and it makes it more sort of highlighted, doesn't it, if we're talking about bullying?
Oh, definitely. You know, he's got to deal with the discrimination, you know, the racism, and then also, again, feeling like he's less of because he's an Aboriginal boy with a disability, so I've often referred to it as like a double-edged sword.
Yes.
But I'm now trying to help him understand that that's his superpower. Mm. You know, that's what sets him apart. He's going to be known because he stands out in a crowd. He was born different for a very high purpose, and, you know, he's 9 years old and he's not really understanding of that at the moment.
And I want to confirm that age too. He's 9 years old because there's a statement around the so-called social media saying he's 18-year-old acting. Not the case.
Yeah. Well, look... He bungs it on and he's very mature, so I can understand why people think he's much older. And there's been that many comments, you know, a nine-year-old wouldn't know, you know, those things. And I was like, really? That just goes to show your ignorance, because you obviously haven't been exposed to Indigenous communities. When we're burying our babies from 8 years old, so, yeah, it might not happen in the Western world where you've got, you know, eight-year-olds taking their lives, although it is happening just not as frequently. So when I hear those comments, it's like, yeah, it doesn't happen in your ideal world, but it's happening every single day in Aboriginal communities. So
exactly.
I think it's time for people to wake up.
And to clear the air, Quaden Bales is not a financial vehicle for your family. No way.
Oh, I wish he was. Look, I'm still a single mum, still renting. Still
shut up.
Driving. I have no car at the moment, so I wish he would start.
Yeah, having, shut up. And so that clears the air, you know. It wasn't a scam. Oh. It wasn't for the money. Highlighting bullying, which needs to stop across the globe. And here you get the backlash. Little black boy scamming the people, 18-year-old, what have you.
I know. You got to laugh at it, you know.
Gotta.
Like, all of the rumours we've heard about our darling boy and our family, it just goes to show that people obviously didn't do their research and didn't do a quick Google search to realise, you know, the legacy that we're continuing, the family and the deadly community and people that we've been raised a part of. So,
and he's a little fighter. He's dreamt sunbonked to Tiger Bales. So there it is, strong in spirit,
that's
sister.
Exactly. You know, we've got a long, long line of legends that we're, you know, we've inherited such a strong legacy that, you know, we need to continue and pick up where our old people left off. And Quaden's definitely got pop spirit instilled in him.
Yes.
Very staunch 9-year old boy. He's going to be 10 soon.
So yeah, there you go. Don't tell me about boats.
Yeah, bless him.
So, what's he doing? How's he travelling? And is he playing any sports? And what grade is he?
So, Quaden just returned to grade 4 with a part time program. So, he goes 3 days a week.
Okay.
With his condition, it's very tiring. You know, he's
literally
half the size of the rest of the students in his class. So he needs, if he has one physically active day, he needs 1 day bed rest.
Yeah.
So he's got his next surgery date coming up on the 14th. So it's pretty much been appointments in hospital and just trying to improve his quality of life. And I tell you what, the first thing I'm going to do is, you know, when we do get some money, is make sure he's got private healthcare, because that's something that we've never been able to afford.
Sure, beautiful.
And we've had to wait for, you know, life-saving surgery, and there's just so much that needs to be done that I've never been able to afford. So, yeah, I'd love to be able to make sure that, to know that he's going to be okay, you know, and get the best care. Because I think when we've exposed so much corruption in the system, it affects the quality of care we receive. So for me to have peace of mind as a mother, to know that my son will get the best, you know, possible care, then, you know, that's just going to put my mind at ease, and he'll be right. We know that much.
Yarraka, we send our love to the little fella. We're all in support. Stand behind your strong First Nation radio station here in Cairns and across this nation, all the First Nation radio station, where your beautiful father, pioneer of this fantastic industry. Thank you very much, my sister. One love and big shout out to the young brother, and we'll be in touch. Okay, sis?
Cheers, mate. too early, my brother, and I'll have to come in next time I'm in Canada.
Please, because we'll badmouth you.
No, I'll be there when I've got more time. It's just a quick overnight trip.
Yarika, thank you, sis.
I'll have to bring him back.
Bye, darling.
My brother.
Bye-bye.
Go on.
Beautiful young there, Yarika Bales, and talking about her beautiful son, Quaden Bales, the 9-year-old Indigenous boy with dwarfism, and they're suing New Corp's columnist Miranda Devine for defamation over tweets suggesting he pretended to be a victim of bullying in a viral online video. And that was a conversation there with Yarika Bales. She was up here in Cairns on business, and strong mother, strong black woman, and we support the work that she's doing, and also a big shout out the young Quaden Bales, and he's the grandson of Tiger Bales, and with us in spirit, Uncle Tiger, Brother Tiger, who's one of the pioneers of First Nation radio stations across this country. So fantastic, and that's why I sit in this chair today, because of a man like him. Too Deadly, have you say Yarn Up Strong here on your daily program, National Talk Black. 1-800-422-416 is the number you need to call. Yarn Up with the Bully One, Trevor Tim, Trinity Trev, Murray from the Curry, live on First Nation radio station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bumblebee Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. You can have your say calling us on that deadly number, 1-800-422-416. Opening doors to a new era, making sure it's correct. Not an error, otherwise you will disconnect. And the darkest days won't last forever. Even brighter days come sooner or later. Yaka win, thinking much about what you're not. Really need no more worry, bunga what gotta do. What you gotta do, it's up to you. Where you wanna head up to, it is hard, you're gonna have to break through. They turning up the pressure till it breaks you. So break through, come on. They come, they go, but this I know. Got me feeling like a preacher. There's nothing that you can't achieve when you're a seeker. Say what? Keep on moving straight ahead and be your icon like a filler for the next gen. Okay, okay. They come, they go, but this I know.
Troy Cassidale here. You're with Trevor on National Talk Black. Don't move that dial.
Come on, drive it. Drive it like you stole it, son. Drive it. Strap on.
A very good morning, you Daily Mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from Macquarie, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bummer Brit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. You can have your say by calling us on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. All right, now Monash University, to accelerate the development of a novel medicine designed to save women's lives in childbirth. We're going to catch up a yarn now with Professor Michelle McIntosh, the project leader of MIPS, and that's the Monash University Institute of Pharmaceutical Science. On the line, Professor, very good morning. How are you?
Great, thanks, Trevor. Good morning. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you very much for coming to the program. I believe, yeah, you're based down in Melbourne, Victoria.
Yes, absolutely. We are in our stage 4 lockdowns in Melbourne at the moment, but hopefully containing the spread of the virus.
Yeah, thinking of you guys down there, like I said, we don't have a vaccine for the virus, so we just need to abide by the rules. That is the best medicine we've got at this point in time. Is that right?
Absolutely, yes. The whole personal hygiene, wearing a mask, keeping your distance is making a huge difference in containing the spread of the virus.
So, look, our topic today, yarn today, is novel medicine designed to save women's lives in childbirth. So, enlighten us, please, on how we can save our beautiful women and our beautiful children.
Yeah, absolutely. So, it's quite astonishing, I think, and probably a lot of people don't realise that every year, over a quarter of a million women will die during the process of childbirth as a consequence of a complication during childbirth. And hundreds of thousands more children will die in the first year of life. And those numbers are really phenomenal.
Yes.
So the single largest cause of death in childbirth is due to excessive bleeding immediately after childbirth. It's called postpartum hemorrhage. And so,
is it more the infant or the mother?
That's the mother. But there's quite a lot of evidence to show that the chances of the child's survival is greatly diminished if the mother doesn't survive as well. And, of course, then there's often siblings as well. So it has a really profound impact on the whole community.
When you say siblings, you mean twins in the birth or siblings?
No. So if this particular birth isn't the first child that this lady is giving birth to,
yep,
then, you know, she might have other children who also
affect all the way
suffer
through
poorer outcomes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Very, very sad situation. So, what are we doing? How do we prevent this?
So, a lot of people, understand that postpartum hemorrhage is almost entirely preventable if a woman has access to a good quality oxytocin injection that can be administered by a healthcare provider or someone with them immediately after childbirth. So it'll dramatically reduce the likelihood of postpartum hemorrhage. And then if excessive bleeding does still continue, then more oxytocin can be administered in an effort to stop that blood loss.
So that injection is not being administered, is what you're saying? Or there's not enough of it? Or
it's primarily in low-income, low-resource settings, developing countries, that perhaps the healthcare system isn't as robust as what we're fortunate enough to experience in Australia. And either the woman will be giving birth at home alone and hasn't been able to get to a healthcare facility, or nobody's been able to get to her, or the quality of the oxytocin, if it hasn't been stored in the refrigerator, it will degrade to a point where it eventually doesn't work.
Mm.
And so many of these instances, it's actually a poor quality product,
sure,
rather than not getting access at all.
So that would be more so like third world countries, second world countries?
Yes, definitely. What would traditionally be sort of referred to as third world countries, sub-Saharan Africa and in parts of India, the number of women who die each year is, you know, enormous number.
So the medical world would have this at the table for discussion to prevent human life's death, yes?
Oh, absolutely. It's been a big focus of what's now described as the Sustainable Development Goals, an international commitment to sort of, you know, reduce the number of people living in poverty throughout the world and different healthcare sort of gaps. But unfortunately, one of the outcomes of COVID is probably it's going to set back the progress on these health initiatives by decades. Because, you know, women are now being discouraged, don't go to the facility.
Because of COVID-19, of course.
Because of COVID-19, yeah. So, unfortunately, that is an issue that we'll be sort of dealing with going into the future.
Well, you could say that COVID-19 has virtually hastened up the solution to the problem, so to speak.
Well, I would hope that it does. A huge amount of money and resources gone into looking for treatments and vaccines for COVID-19. Exactly. And, you know, hopefully money is still available for these other problems that you know, these chronic,
I must admit, the focus in the medical world at the moment is the vaccine for COVID-19. So, as you say, they may, drop the ball, so to speak, if they're not focused on the other diseases or problems out there in the medical world.
Yeah, that's a real risk that is there, that other important areas of medical research will be slowed down. But we've been very lucky at Monash to have been very well supported by philanthropy and our industry partners. So we are absolutely committed to finding a solution to get good quality oxytocin to women at the time of childbirth to save lives.
Well, congratulations, the MIPS department, the work that you guys are doing there at Monash University. Thank you very much for sharing, Professor Michelle. All the best to you and your team and your family. Look, stay safe, stay warm, and we'll yarn soon.
Yes, no worries. Look forward to talking to you again. Thanks, Trevor.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
A deadly yarn there with Professor Michelle McIntosh, the project leader for MIPS. And MIPS is the Monash University Institute of Pharmaceutical Science, and talking about the novel medicine designed to save women's lives in childbirth. And it's very sad, but it's estimated 60,000 deaths per year in resource-limited countries, a novel from oxytocin and inhalable dry powder that does not require refrigeration could enable ease of use by front-line health workers, birth attendants and mothers themselves. So looking after our special cargo, our beautiful children and our mothers out there in the second, third world countries. We're pretty safe here in Australia, but let's not drop the ball. And they're still doing their work in regarding saving our beautiful women out there, our mothers and our children. Even though there is a pandemic on, a lot of focus in the medical world is about the vaccine for the virus, but let's not drop the ball in other departments. A very deadly conversation there. Have your say, your mob, yarn up strong, add to the conversation here on National Talk Black. Deadly number here is 1-800-422-416. Call that number, yarn is yours truly, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from Nakari, your host for your daily program, National Talk Black. And I come to you live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. BBM, Bumba Brit Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. Give me a call, 1-800-422-416.